Hello, this is Sakurako.
And this is Andrew. And you're listening to
Uncurie Talks.
Talks.
So it's been a while since we've recorded our last podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, fill us in. What's up? What's been up?
been super busy with the new job. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Allegedly.
Yeah, your career as a police officer.
Yep.
So how long have you been a police officer?
So I'm almost 3 months out of the academy.
Out of the academy, okay. Yeah. So how long was the police academy?
The police academy was just a little bit less than 6 months.
6 months?
Yeah, so I started, it was January 7th and graduated in... right at the end of May, right? So February, March, April, May. Yeah, so like a little bit more than 4 months.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then we got extended because of snow days. I think it would have been like exactly 4 months, but we got some snow at the beginning of the year and ended up having snow days from the police academy, which is pretty funny.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 4 months or 5 months in police academy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, how was the experience in police academy?
I mean, it was fun, but, you know, after having graduated, and the way that my department works is that we just go straight out to the street. A lot of other departments, they do, like, it's called post-BLIA.
Mm-hmm.
BLIA is the Basic Law Enforcement Academy. And so most other departments, their students graduate from the police academy, and then for 2 or 3 more months, mm-hmm. they will do like a post academy with their agency where they don't go out on the street and they just are in a classroom. One of my really good friends works for Seattle, and they have for the entirety of 3 months been in a classroom every day, just learning
even
more
after
things.
The police
yeah.
academy.
And,
right.
and I understand why they do that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the stuff in the academy was. Well, I don't want to be super negative, but, you know, it was just very basic, and it was just kind of, we only have so much time, obviously, to learn in the academy, and we didn't really get to cover a lot that's mm-hmm. actually applicable on the street.
Yeah.
It mostly was just testing and, like, just put a check in the box so the state can say that they taught you this.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that Washington works with the police academy is really interesting compared to other states. In my home state of Illinois, most police officers will go to an academy only through their agency.
Okay.
So they will be in a classroom only with other people from their department.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll only learn things about their agency and their beat. And then it's hard for them to transfer to other departments, even in their own state.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it works here in Washington is that it's a statewide accredited academy. So there's two academies in the state. They're both part of the same affiliation. There's just one way on the east side for Yakima and Spokane and all the huge departments out on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one here in the Seattle area. And all the departments, everybody in the entire state has to attend the same police academy.
Right.
So, you know, I think we had 17 different police agencies in my academy class, which was really great. It's great for networking. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have already talked to people and worked with other people from different agencies, mm-hmm. things that we were able to coordinate and stuff like that. It's been really interesting. It was a great experience. And because of that, we can lateral very easily to all other departments in the state. And then the next level to that is that Washington is one of the highest rated, we have one of the highest rated police academies in the United States.
Wow.
So it's very easy for us to actually move to other states because our accreditation is very high. That police academy is, police academy is, I think, I don't want to say that it's harder, but I think the testing, it's like the standards are higher in Washington.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for us to move to other states.
Right. So speaking of the standards, how difficult is it to graduate from a police academy?
Hmm. Yeah, so I don't think the police academy, I mean, the hiring process is pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff you have to do.
Do you remember how long it took you to go through the entire hiring process?
Yeah, I would say from start to finish, it was probably pretty close to 9 or 10 months.
Mm.
But a lot of that is because there's a lot of testing at the front end. So you go, you sit for tests, and you have to do all these things.
Written test?
A written test and a physical test, and then... you can apply to multiple, again, because we have that standardized
mm-hmm.
process here in Washington. I would take one test and I can apply to every agency in the state if that's
mm-hmm.
what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so basically, it'd be a good idea to choose more than one agency to test for.
Right.
And you do that before you take the test, because after you take the test, you can't send your results to new agencies. You have to select who you're testing for prior to taking the test.
Mm-hmm.
So you do the test, and then after that, it's just basically on the agency to get you through the hiring process. And there's, I think, almost like 20 steps that you have to go through with the agency in order to pass their background investigation and their interview panels. Yeah, it's very...
So, one of the agencies that you applied for, they called me, mm-hmm. not you, called me for a background check, and they asked me a bunch of questions about you and how, they just basically verified if the information that you provided them were accurate. Mm-hmm. So I was like sweating much on the phone because I was not about to, fuck your career app.
And the agency that I worked for at the time, we were living about 4 hours away.
Right.
More than that with driving.
So you did a lot of driving.
I did a lot of driving, but, one of the very last steps was that they actually sent one of the patrol commanders to our house to interview
you. Yes, I baked cookies.
He drove for 4 hours to come
sure
interview
did.
You and then myself again.
Yeah. Well, that's the agency that you're with. So, I think my cookies...
Yeah.
Treated him well.
Yeah.
Found him well.
The cookies got the job.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, but going back to my original question, how many people failed to graduate from police academy in your class?
So we initially went there and took the physical screening test to actually enter the academy. So you have to pass a PT test, basically like a push-up, sit-ups, a run, a sprint,
mm-hmm.
and pull-ups and all that stuff to actually enter the academy.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that once when you take the public safety test,
mm-hmm.
but then you have to take that portion of it again to actually class up and enter the police academy. And
mm-hmm.
I think we went there with, there were almost 40 people there. I know that I wasn't actually supposed to be in the class that I was in, but my agency sent me early as an auxiliary, quote
right.
unquote,
yeah.
in case somebody failed the physical, because they have a very high failure rate for the physical.
Mm-hmm.
before the test. So I was the sixth person in line of extras,
mm-hmm.
and I made it into the class.
Wow, so quite a few people failed the physical test.
And we didn't even, the minimum class size is 30, and we actually only started with 29. So we initially started with 40, at least that many people, 10 people or whatever failed the physical, 11 people would have been, and then we
mm-hmm.
actually classed up with 29 students.
All right.
And so from there, we lost 3 or 4 students
mm-hmm.
throughout the time. We graduated with 28 or something, and we gained 2 from another class
right.
ahead of us.
So you had 3 or 4 people
Yeah,
3
failed? Or 4 failures.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So, congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, first off. And it seems like you are enjoying your new path very much.
I'm absolutely enjoying it. Yeah, it's
good.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. And at times it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like everything that you could experience, maybe, just like in a day. Like every day is just craziness.
Yeah,
but
nice. Yeah.
But it's also a lot of fun. There's times when it's very serious and it can't be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we try to make it fun. And at the end of the day, you get to turn on your lights and sirens, and you're the police, man. You get to drive like a crazy person, and you get to where you need to
go. I've definitely noticed that, behavioral change in your driving.
Oh, yeah.
Since you became a police officer.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you're more aggressive or anything. It's just, it's, more intact, you know? There is no... you ain't kidding, that's how I feel. But I have a bunch of questions that I received from my Twitter followers.
Sure.
So if you want to start off with a Q&A
It's important that I don't know what the questions are, so I haven't had the opportunity to prepare. And I did that on purpose. I don't want to know what the questions are.
Yeah, we wanted to just make it as real as possible.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the easier questions.
Okay.
So is there a age limit to take the test to become a police officer?
Yeah, I believe it's either 34 or 36 here in Washington State.
The highest? The oldest?
Yeah, the oldest.
Okay.
Yeah. The youngest.
The youngest
So in Washington State, this is a weird law to explain, I think, but you have to be the age of 21 when you graduate from the police academy.
Huh.
So you can get hired at 20
mm-hmm.
as long as you have 6 months only until you're 21 or whatever, right? So the law is that you have to be 21 years of age or older upon graduation and commission. So
okay,
yeah.
So there are no cops that are younger than 21.
No, there used to be. But this is a newer law. Mm-hmm. It used to be 20, but now it's 21.
Yeah. So with a standard.
Right.
That is
current. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. I thought this question. This is actually probably my favorite question.
Okay.
But do you ever stop by to purchase donuts during your shift?
Yes. Yes. Not always. I'm still on FTO.
Uh-huh.
It's the field training program.
Yeah.
I go out and I'm a regular cop every day. I'm just graded on everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody helps me, but there's an officer who rides with me and just grades me on every decision that mm-hmm. I make and everything I do. So where I go to eat and what I do is basically up to him. He's basically
your training
but officer. Now and again, now and again, I'll ride with somebody as a fill-in for the day
mm-hmm.
Who will be like, hey, let's stop over here and get donuts. What we usually do on a normal day is go to Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
do they even sell donuts at Starbucks?
I don't know. I've never bought a donut at Starbucks, but I have gone two or three times to actually just buy donuts.
Okay.
But usually we have this thing where our sergeants, they're like, their little inside policy is that if it's somebody's birthday, they buy donuts for the whole crew.
Oh.
And so usually our briefing at the beginning of the day, we sit in what's called a mission briefing or like a team briefing. And it's just the start of the day. They show us, oh, this is what happened today. You know, this mm-hmm. craziness happened, or this is new training from the state that they want us to put out. And then here's donuts. And we all eat donuts and drink
which
coffee.
Which is like every other day, like, because there are so many people in the department.
Exactly.
So it's basically somebody's birthday every day.
Yeah, we have, I think right now we have 114 officers.
Okay.
So it's, it's somebody's birthday. It seems like every day or every other day.
And,
so it's donuts are pretty common.
Yeah. So our stereotype is not that far
no,
off.
No, we eat a lot of donuts. It's very, donuts, pizza, and coffee is what we kind of run
Did
on.
They give you guys free donuts at, like, donut shops?
So there's a bunch of donut shops in the beat where I work. And it's like, you know, Tuesdays, I think, at Super, or not Super Donuts, but I can't remember the name of the place, but I think Tuesdays is like cop day, where it's like you can go in and get free donut and free coffee as a cop.
But it's not every day?
It's not every day, and the donut shop is actually owned by a cop, so of course.
Yeah, that's cool though. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. But it's just a complimentary, item.
Well, it's Legendary Donuts, that's the name of it. But no purchase necessary. You can just go in and eat a donut, and I don't know.
Every day?
On Tuesdays.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so in this area that we reside in, seems like cops don't get donuts for free every day, but they do on Tuesdays.
They do on Tuesdays
at a certain donut shops.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So you're definitely a cop.
Yeah.
So let's see. Why did you decide to become a cop?
Well, I mean, just to be totally honest, I was leaving the military, and didn't know entirely what I wanted to do. I had kind of done the whole school thing while I was in the military and hated school and didn't want to do school again. And I know that there's a significant demand for law enforcement officers in a lot of states, but here in Washington State, it's really, really bad. I mean, most departments are severely understaffed. I know, like, Seattle, more than 50% of their actual active police officers are eligible for retirement right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, they just can't find enough people to pass the tests and then pass the polygraph, which is a lie detector test that's required by law for law enforcement officers to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw that there was a demand there, and just kind of the pay is really great here in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very interested in law enforcement as well. Mm-hmm. I get to go out and do cool stuff every day and carry a firearm. And, I get the opportunity to maybe help somebody or maybe even some days save lives. I mean, that's kind of something that I'm really interested in, is actually being able to make a positive impact on people. And then, not to rant about this question, but the other side of that too is where I grew up, I did not have a good experience with police officers. In fact, I would venture to say that I kind of grew up disliking the police
mm-hmm.
because of the way that that myself and friends were treated by the police officers. And man, they were terrible to us. And I kind of, from that, learned how not to act as a police officer. I knew that perhaps I could go out and not act that way and make a positive impact on somebody's life, especially the kids.
Yeah.
try to always be friendly to kids, unlike the police where I grew up, who absolutely just wanted to kick our asses, it seemed like. So.
Yeah, I see. So, what sparked your interest in law enforcement in the first place?
Yeah. So, I did this deployment with some of my buddies when I was in the Navy, and for some reason we got, like, obsessed with watching Cops.
Cops is a very, very popular television show in the States.
And it's, like, it's real. It's, like, the camera crew just follows cops in, like, really busy cities and just sees what they do.
Yeah, we have a very similar TV show
people,
back home.
People overseas watch... I mean, I imagine a lot of people listening to this podcast probably are familiar with the show Cops. Uh-huh. But, so we kind of got into watching this show, and for those of you who don't know, Cops has been on since, like, 1989. It's one of the longest-running television shows, and my leading petty officer at the time, actually, that's a rank in the Navy, he downloaded every single season, every episode of Cops from start to finish to the current season, and we watched every single episode of Cops, and kind of all of us got interested in doing law enforcement.
Yeah.
And my buddy Jimmy got super into wanting to be a cop, and then I kind of wasn't interested initially, but then just, I don't know, I just got really interested. And then initially I wanted to do federal law enforcement, but just kind of did a lot of the hiring process for that, and it just took so long that I decided to, you know, again, as I was leaving the military, to go with state level or local law enforcement, which so far I believe was the correct choice for me. I mean, the things that we get to do, I'm in a very busy area. I work in a city that would probably be considered by most people a pretty bad bad place. It's right outside Seattle, and it's just a violent, just a busy, lot of bad stuff, a lot of gang-related violence and robberies and things like that, and property crime is really heavy. And the things that I get to do every day, I mean, if I had gone into federal law enforcement, it would probably be years before I did any of this stuff. I mean, if ever, you know, the things that I get to do in a normal day, for me, I am already familiar. I've met other officers from smaller agencies or other agencies who, that's the really crazy stuff for them. Or for me, that's, for us, that's just a really normal thing.
So you're at the very front end of the force.
I'm just the lowest level patrol officer right now. So yeah, we're the ones handling every single call in the city. And, you know, the city I work, I think we've got 106,000 people, which is not a very huge city, but our crimes per capita are through the roof. It's just a very violent place right now.
Right. So, I see. So, another question. Is it a common career path for former military service members to become police officers?
It is. At my department, we have, I think, like 40% of our current commissioned officers are military veterans.
Oh, wow.
And I think that that's really normal. A lot of people coming out of the military, and I know, like, agencies, they hire, they'll do hiring events on bases and stuff like that. I know, like, my agency there, they go to Army bases and Navy bases every day trying to find people. And they recruit heavily from veterans because you pick up in the military a lot of basic discipline and skills that you need to kind of solve problems on your own and be independent. Because that's the kind of what a law enforcement officer is nowadays. There are not very many cities. You know, you watch, like, cop shows from the 80s and 90s, and it's like two guys in a car sitting there eating donuts, and everything they do, they got to call a supervisor or whatever, you know, and it's not that way now. Policing, you're on your own. Everything's kind of up to you. The decisions you have to make, it's all on you. Yeah. I mean, I can't be calling my sergeant every day to ask him what I need to do in this, because he's busy, just as busy as I am.
Yeah, so that leads to my question. This is a question for me to you. So you are probably were very used to be working in an environment where there was a chain of commands.
Yeah.
And from what you just told me, it's a very different working environment where you said you're on your own. You are your, you know, own boss, pretty much. Yeah. You had to make decisions.
Yeah, and of course, if I make the wrong decision, or like a drastically wrong decision, or if I do need help, if I desperately need help, there's people that I can ask. I mean, we do have a rank structure, but it is not observed in the way that the military is. Like, for instance, I'm a patrol officer, lowest of the low. I mean, it doesn't, you can't be a police officer and be a lower rank than I am right now. And then directly, my first line supervisor is a sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
So he's somebody who's been working probably for 6 to 10 years as a police officer. And he is considered my supervisor. And again, if something goes bad, or he can tell me what to do and things like that, but it's not like as formal as the military. Like, we call each other bro, and he's just there if things go bad, basically.
Yeah.
And again, just because we're so busy where I work and kind of understaffed at the moment, our first line supervisors are, unfortunately, they're out going to calls as well. They're taking their own calls and they're writing reports just the same as the patrol officers are.
Yeah.
And actually, it's so bad right now that some of our patrol commanders are having to go to calls and take paper just because, you know, yesterday there were 286 calls for service. And my entire agency only has 114 officers or whatever, and it's divided.
It's a very overwhelming.
It's divided, so, you know, at most, you know, we might have 6 to 10 people there at a time for a 10-hour shift, and it's just...
Would you say the pressure is greater?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, the pressure is immense because, you know, we have 114 commissioned officers, but, like, a huge number of them are in detectives and are attached to, like, the DEA task force. We got, you know, the SWAT guys. I mean, they're not always going to calls in the same way that the patrol officers are. So I think at the time we've got like 40 patrol officers, and it's just like, just madness.
Yeah.
I think last night, so I worked a 10-hour shift. I went in yesterday at 1600 and I got off at 0230 this morning. And the entire time there were 5 officers at work.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. And we had some support. We had a call yesterday where 2 detectives had to come out.
Okay.
But, you know, that was it. It's just there's nobody there.
and
we have to just back each other. You know,
it's like definitely overwhelming amount of work for you guys for such a little amount of people, like small amount of people to take care of.
It is, yeah. And that's, we're spread very thin because obviously... What a lot of people don't see, they see the police coming to calls and all that, and they see maybe they'll see a police officer arrest somebody or do CPR on somebody, but what they don't see is how much paperwork goes into all that. I mean, yesterday my shift was, I was out on the street going to calls for 5 or 6 hours, and then I spent the remaining 4 or 5 hours of my shift just doing paperwork the whole time, writing reports.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to document everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just... Even that I went and talked to somebody, it has to be documented and what our conversation was about. And it's a huge amount of work. I mean, I think that people, and I know that I was guilty of it before I was a police officer, I don't think that people know what being a police officer actually means.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was guilty of it before I was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that being a police officer is really the way that people think. Like, we don't do what people think we do. I think that's
very interesting. Yeah, a lot of paperwork.
Lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I hope in the near future that portion of your job will be replaced by the rise of artificial intelligence. But we'll see.
Yeah.
So next question is, you know, the climate toward the police is pretty intense right now. So on TV and on media, we would see a lot of videos and a lot of like social media posts that are exposing police officers using excessive force and being, you know, discriminatory toward like certain group of people and stuff like that. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's just like anything else. There's good and there's bad people in any job. You know, I think that it's very easy to make law enforcement look very negative because of the amount of exposure that we have. You know, nobody films car mechanics while they're working to see if they mess up. Even if they do mess up, nobody cares. You know, if a car mechanic fixes your car in an incorrect fashion, and you just get mad about it and you try to get your money back, right? And that's the end of it. But when we do our job incorrectly, or when there's an officer who makes a poor decision, obviously, you know, we're being recorded. We're recording ourselves. We have the general public recording us all the time. I mean, every time I get out of my car, there's 2 or 3 people with phones out recording me. You know, I'm just there to give a kid a sticker or get a cup of coffee, and there's people recording me like I'm about to do something bad, you know. So, I think it's really easy to fall into the trap of believing that, like, all law enforcement is bad, or they're all, you know, the endless thing is that law enforcement is all racist. I think that's really, really stupid. I mean, I don't, as much as I love dealing with people, if it were up to me, I would go to work every day and not talk to anybody. The only reason I go anywhere is because I get called for help. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. If you don't want to see a cop, then don't commit crimes and don't do stupid shit, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, that's, I would just stay in my car and drive around all day if it were up to me, but unfortunately that's not reality. And people try to, you know, I've got that, I'm arresting somebody and they're like, oh, you're only arresting me because of this or because of that. And
yeah.
It's like, well, if you didn't just punch your wife in the face, then I wouldn't even be here.
Right.
So I think it's pretty stupid.
I see.
I don't know if that was a good way to answer that question, but.
There's no, you know, right or wrong answer. We
yeah.
were just really curious yeah. about what you think. But.
Yeah, and you know, I think the huge thing right now is people take these clips of a law enforcement officer doing their job, which is probably a 45-minute to an hour-long clip, and they'll just edit it down to the last 10 seconds
mm-hmm.
where something happens, either a shooting or a fight or an excessive force arrest or something like that, or
mm-hmm.
it makes it look excessive when you don't get the backstory, and it's, you know, and the media just jumps all over that, and people on social media that work at Walmart who think they know what they're talking about won't act like they're analyzing that 10-second clip
mm-hmm.
and they'll kind of extrapolate from that the answer that they want it to be, like,
yeah.
oh this cop is obviously racist because look what he just did, when you know, again, maybe the cop wouldn't even be there if that dude wasn't initially doing something wrong, you
mm-hmm.
know. So
yeah,
and again, I'm not saying, I mean, there are bad cops out there are plenty of people who shouldn't be cops, that's true in any job. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Yeah
I think I am guilty of that, but the society people are more than ever looking for instant gratification. So we like quick clips.
Agreed, yeah.
We like instant answers. We like very extreme display of somebody's behavior, because then we can so easily label that person
yeah.
with something like racist or,
right.
you know, sexist or something. So yeah, I agree with you, but I'm sorry, but
and I think it's really interesting, and I've already noticed it. I've only been on the street for 3 months, and you know, if I go to a call, and this is not me complaining, but if I go to a call and yesterday I was contacting we were contacting a couple of gang members who we knew were just involved in a robbery with a firearm. So they were robbing somebody at gunpoint and they were about to be arrested, you know, and there's people coming out of every apartment around us, filming us, like, you know,
yeah.
waiting for us to do something bad. And, you know, we weren't obviously doing anything bad, or else you'd see my face on CNN or something. But, and it's, you know, people jump all over that when they have a way to make it look like we're doing something we shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm doing CPR on somebody, or pumping on somebody, trying to fix them, or putting a tourniquet on a gunshot wound on somebody, nobody records that. Nobody
mm-hmm.
gives a shit about that. It's really interesting to me. Just that people want to make, like, viral videos.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that instant gratification. You're absolutely right. That's what it is. Nobody gives a shit when something good happens. And it appears to me that if something is actually newsworthy, it never actually makes it on the news, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's very interesting.
I feel like only the negative, you know, news make
yeah.
it to the national television.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not somebody like a crazy pro police, all that stuff. I mean, I didn't grow up like super pro police. I don't wear
mm-hmm.
a thin blue line shirt or anything like that. I mean, I'm just a regular guy. But I think you need to look at things objectively instead of just kind of jumping on the bandwagon there. You just make yourself look simple and like you can't think for yourself, is how that appears to me. So
yeah.
And I've been guilty of it in the past, no doubt, but I think it's time that a lot of people start thinking with a reasonable, rational, and open mind
mm-hmm.
and try to see things for what they are versus the way that other people want you to see it. So
mm-hmm.
and that's not just for policing, that's for everything in life.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's for sure. So thank you so much for answering that
yeah.
very difficult, probably to you,
nah,
questions.
I like talking about it.
But yeah, so the next question is, do you ever get scared or, you know, terrified of certain situations or the possibilities of getting hurt or encountering some really, really dangerous or violent people?
Well, yeah, I mean, almost on a daily. The fact of the matter is that we're the ground level guys that the detectives put things together, or sometimes we even put them together, and we've got to go contact people who maybe were just involved in violent crime or potentially involved in violent crime, or who we know to be super paranoid and aggressive and have firearms in the house. And I think that's probably the time that I'm scared ever, mm-hmm. is when I am contacting somebody who I know to have warrants or who I know to have recently committed a violent crime, and I'm knocking on their door.
Right. So you don't know what's behind the door or what that person is doing.
I had one situation. Here in Washington, we have a lot of really, really, really stringent laws that protect people's privacy, and rightfully so. That protects, that prevents law enforcement from just being able to kick in the door and go do crazy stuff for, like, basic level crimes. I mean, you can if somebody has committed a very violent crime or something. Obviously, if we're chasing a murder suspect, I'll kick in the door, right? But I had gone to this house for a call completely unrelated. I didn't even know this dude was in the house.
Mm.
I was actually there to contact his mother because she had a dog who was attacking goats. It was an animal call. In our animal control people, we're not on shift. So I go out to this house, and, you know, there's the dog. The dog is violently attacking one of the goats. I'm trying to contact the mother, can't figure it out, and one of the neighbors comes out and gives me the neighbor's phone number. So I call her, and she's at work, and I'm like, okay, well, your dog is attacking your goats. Since the dog is yours and the goats are yours, there's nothing I can do. This is going to have to be something that... And she's like, oh, my son is in the house. Just go knock on the door, and he'll come out, and he'll get the dog. Perfect. That's an easy way for me to solve the problem. So I go knock on the door, and it's this weird metal door on the front of the house that's like fine metal mesh almost. Like, I can't see into the house, but whoever's in the house can see out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the inside door opens, and this person is standing talking to me behind the door. And he's like, oh, what the fuck do you want? I'm like, whoa, man, I'm just here to let you know that your dog is attacking your goats and whatever else. This dude is super, super, super aggressive. He's, you know, yelling at me through the door and cursing at me through the door. And I'm trying to explain to him that I'm just here to let him know about the goats. He's telling me to fuck off and all this. So super confusing. I wasn't really sure. So I call the woman who owns the house and the goats back. And I'm like, hey, I don't know who is in the house, but he's super angry and won't come out to remove the dog from the goat pasture, so you're on your own. And she's like, oh, that's my son. She gives me his name. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll just look him up and try to figure out why he's so aggressive. And so I go back to my car and I run him, and, you know, of course he's got two felony warrants, a misdemeanor warrant, and a DOC escape custody warrant, which is a really big deal. And, you know, his prior was for assault 3, which is assault on a police officer, a paramedic, or a firefighter. He's a very violent guy. He's been in and out of jail for, you know, assault 1, which is probably going to be pointing a firearm at or even shooting a firearm at somebody, and just a very violent dude. And I went back up and tried to recontact him to pull him out of the house for his warrants. And, you know, it was very eerie as I'm going up to that front door. He knows I'm there. I know he's inside, but I can't see him. And his priors are for crimes committed with firearms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm knocking on that door wondering if he's just going to shoot at us, mm-hmm. through the door or through a window. And I was pretty, pretty scared at that point.
Yeah, you know? So the uncertainty of the situation, what might have...
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we know that there's a violent person in this home. We're there for an unrelated issue. And there's certain things. If he just had a misdemeanor warrant, then we could just load up in our car and leave.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to pursue someone very heavily for a misdemeanor warrant. In fact, we're not going to pursue you at all for a misdemeanor warrant. But since he had very high-level felonies, both priors and current warrants, you know, it was something that that we can't pass up on. So
Did you end up arresting the guy?
We did, yeah. It actually wasn't me. It ended up being a SWAT call out. He'd barricaded himself in the home, and it was a mess. But it ended up, it was like a 6-hour standoff with SWAT.
Jesus. So,
yeah, it's always something. But we ended up, there were like 100 calls for service holding, so we had to leave, and we passed it off to SWAT, and they ended up pulling him out. So,
yeah,
I was uninvolved.
Yeah, obviously, so that was really sketchy, scary situation for you. How do you deal with that fear?
You just gotta sack up and make sure your pants are on tight and just go head on. I mean, there's not... There's plenty of things in the career that you can walk away from.
But this is not one of them.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that you can't walk away from.
Yeah, of course.
And I think getting into this job, you've already accepted that that
fate.
You got to put yourself out there. You got to be all in sometimes, which unfortunately where I work happens once or twice a day.
Yeah. So, do you ever get scared of dying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wear body armor every day, but it's only rated to pistol. And obviously, a lot of people own rifles here, including myself.
That's really interesting. There are not very many, jobs that threatens your life on a daily basis.
Well, and, maybe it's even an irrational fear. And that fear exists for me, for sure. I think about it all the time. But, I mean, the reality is that most law enforcement officers who are killed in the line of duty is not because of shootings or violent people. It's because they're struck by vehicles on accident, or they, because of their own driving, are involved in car accidents. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kills most law enforcement officers. So I think a lot of that fear might be irrational, but that's just what I deal with every day. And that's what I see, and that's what, that's kind of what I confront is that kind of stuff. So...
Yeah. So that obviously sounds like a tremendous amount of stress to me. And also, I know that you've been a police officer only for 3 months, but you've already encountered many deaths.
Yeah.
And some of them died literally in your arms.
While I was doing CPR.
Of course, so... To me, that sounds like a very traumatic event or a series of events. So how do you cope with the stress?
Yeah, I think the right way to deal with things like at work like this is probably the way that anybody deals with anything stressful at work, is that you just have to make it not personal. I go there, I help when I can, I do what I can to try to make sure that everybody's all right, and it's kind of just... I mean, I just kind of put it out of my mind. The truth is that I go call to call to call to call and don't really have a time to, think about it until I'm, at home. When I get home in 2 in the morning, I'll just sit on the couch for a couple minutes and space out at the ceiling and compartmentalize what I need to compartmentalize. And the rest of it, I don't really think. I don't know that there is a really healthy way to deal with that kind
of
stuff.
Course.
And, I think that there's probably a lot of jobs are that way. Maybe not in violence and death, but I think that kind of people deal with that on a similar level, every day with their lives not being the way they wanted to, or they're working for people they hate to work for. So, I think you just kind of have to take it at face value and not just get too over invested. So.
Yeah. Well, I hope you were able to open up to me. About some of the things that really bother you.
Well, talk to you all the time. We just had a cry fest the other day about some stuff.
Yeah, that was very emotionally draining incident to you, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you decided to talk to me.
I
appreciate that.
I always try to tell you all the things. I try to leave out some of the intricate details that maybe you don't need to know. But I feel like I come home and you ask me what I did last night, and I, for the most part, will always tell you.
So. Yeah. So, I'm not a police officer. I've never been in a job where my life is threatened on a daily basis or anything, or where I had to encounter many people's deaths. But I think, especially people that are in the kind of profession, it's important to them to have a support system where they can talk about some of the things, that were particularly intense.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we deal with it really well at work. If there's ever anything, there's a lot of people that I can talk to about it who mm-hmm. have experienced the same things. And, mm-hmm. you know, to tell you the truth, I don't think I struggle with a lot of that kind of stuff. I have a really good support group, and maybe this is not what people listening to this want to hear, but I think first responders have a pretty wide sense of humor that helps us to deal with some of the things. So.
Just be able to, I don't know, not make it as jokes, but
you have to make it fun.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of things that aren't fun in this job, mm-hmm. and that, you know,
just casually brush it off.
You gotta have to take things lightly, mm-hmm. because the way that the other officers keep explaining it to me, and it's interesting. Everybody keeps telling me it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that you just take your time and deal with the things that you need to deal with, because mm-hmm. this is the career that I've chosen for probably the next 25 years of my life, or more, hopefully, if I can get a good old-timer gig or something, mm-hmm. a good old-timer gig. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think you just have to just kind of flow with it and just let things play out and not get over-emotionally invested.
Mm-hmm. So, I think those are the questions that I received from from my followers, and there's one more question that was directed at me, was how does it feel to be a wife of a police officer?
Mm.
And I would say that it feels wonderful mm-hmm. that you are pursuing the career that you're genuinely passionate about.
Yeah.
So, that is literally all I care. I don't care if you work at a Walmart or flipping burgers, you know, at McDonald's, if that's what making you, like, truly happy.
As long as flipping burgers is what I want to do.
Huh? That was just a figure of
speech.
Yeah, so I don't feel anything particular. I don't have any, like, particular emotion
mm-hmm.
or emotions toward you being a police officer. Obviously, I worry about you, and I worry that something might happen to you at work because I think that possibilities of you getting hurt or being like a dangerous situation are way higher than, for instance, flipping burgers at McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
But I know you, and I know that you can handle yourself very well,
mm-hmm.
and that you can handle many different situations very well, and that I have so much trust and basically faith in your abilities to just come home in one piece.
Right.
So I don't worry too much. I do worry, and I do care about you, but I trust in your abilities, and it just really excites me to see you being excited about this new career path.
Yeah, I mean, that makes me really happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And you know, as always, I really appreciate your support. And
of course,
because you're always nothing but supportive to me, and I really appreciate that. You know.
Yeah, we have a really good support system on both sides.
Agreed.
I think.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That being said, I would not want to be the wife of a law enforcement officer.
No, why not?
I just
I don't think you'd want to be a wife in general.
No, I don't think I'd make a very good wife. But I just
you make a fantastic husband.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but yeah, I don't know. I think that there's just a lot of things that I would be just worried about as the spouse of a law enforcement individual. You know?
Yeah, maybe that's because you're picturing me as a
police
officer,
yeah,
and I'm not the kind of person.
Yeah, I can't. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine picturing you as a law enforcement.
Oh man, yeah.
I think you'd be a great detective.
I feel like I would be a good detective.
But I would like to see you bypass patrol for sure. I don't think.
Yeah.
I can't imagine you tasing somebody.
I would just be like flipping my own car
for
no reason. Or something. Yeah, I understand.
And everybody's like, there goes the guy. And you're like, where? And you're looking in the opposite direction like you always do.
Oh my God. So yeah, good thing I'm not a police officer and I'm an artist, so that's good. So I have several questions that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
So, what were your expectations and how is the reality?
Yeah. You know, I knew this job was going to be a lot of fun, and I suspected that there was going to be maybe some traumatic experiences, and I knew I was going to learn a lot and kind of almost become a different person in terms of, like, my career and, like, work. But kind of just what I was talking about earlier, the area where I work is so busy that in a year where I work is probably pretty similar to working for a very long time in other places.
Dog year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of the larger cities are similar in that they experience a lot of things, obviously, because they have very many calls for service. But where I work, we're a large agency, but we're not a huge agency. And so that the way it works where I work is that we are misdemeanor detectives. A patrol level guy is a misdemeanor detective, meaning anything below a felony, we do all our own follow-up work on it. I am qualified to dust for fingerprints and do AFIS, which is the fingerprint scanner with the federal system, and, you know, all the investigatory work that goes into, like, lower level crimes. And so there's, like, a, I just see the whole aspect, the whole bigger picture of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the smaller agencies around where I work is the same way in the Valley in Washington. We run things all similar. We all work together. We're on task force together. So the process is fairly standardized. But it's a little bit different than the way I thought it was going to be, certainly, mm-hmm. in that I've already done all the things that I imagined myself doing that I... You know, a year ago, I was like, man, it'd be so crazy to do that. And then now it's like, yeah, that's like a regular day now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Would you say you had like higher expectations?
Oh, no, way lower.
Lower?
Yeah, lower.
You get to do a lot more stuff.
Yeah,
than
I get to do a lot more stuff than I anticipated. Right. Yeah, and even when I was in the police academy, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. And again, not to keep saying the same thing over and over again, but just because of the current climate where I work, it's that I expected to come out of the academy and have a lot to learn. And I thought I was going to be kind of coached. I thought the training wheels were going to be on and other officers were going to hold my hand through everything.
Mm-hmm.
When the reality is that we don't have time to do that. And instead they just took the leash off and set me free, man. Go figure it out, basically.
Go figure it out
and call us if you need help. It's basically how it goes.
Yeah.
And so it's very different.
Is it because it's understaffed?
Yeah, understaffed, and we just have too many calls because of the level of violence in the Valley right now, and it's just insanity. So.
So my next question to you is, has being a police officer changed any of your values or the way you see the society or the way you see certain policies?
Yeah, certainly. And so, I mean, as you know, I carry a firearm everywhere I go. I have a concealed pistol license, and I have always tried to do a good job of carrying a firearm.
So it's a handgun that you carry?
A handgun,
yes.
Yeah, a handgun that I carry and, in my personal life. And in the past, it's made a lot of sense to me to carry a firearm, and I understood why I carried it, but the way that I see things now, like yesterday, I told you a story earlier, girl sitting in her car, she's coming from school, sitting in her car at a red light, just sitting there minding her own fucking business, and two guys come up with guns pointed at her face and steal her car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, I would say, oh, that's something that only happens in L.A., or some crazy place, and, the reality is that we had, just yesterday, I think we had 4 to 6 armed robberies yesterday where I work. And
meaning that's a frequent
with firearms. And that's a frequent thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that now when I'm out carrying a firearm, I'm alert. I'm not waiting for something to come to me. I'm trying to stay prepared because that's what I see every day. You know, and I realize that it may not happen to you. It's never happened to me in the past, but this is going on a very frequent level. It's happening to somebody.
Yeah, for sure. So like and, kind of prepared.
Yeah. And that's kind of like the bigger picture. I had said earlier that I don't think that people see what the police actually do. And you might sit in traffic and see a police go flying past you and you're like, oh, that's cool. Or that's fucking retarded. Why is he driving that fast? And you don't really put much more thought into it. You don't consider what he's going to. But for that cop that flies past you at 114 miles an hour, this is the 30th call that he's gone on today where he's had to drive that fast to get there. He doesn't know what he's going into. He doesn't know what the situation is. But he knows that as soon as he finishes that one up and everybody's either at the hospital or calmed down, that there's another call holding where he's just going to have to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that that kind of maybe changes the mentality of somebody who does this job, because we have to kind of stay recoiled and waiting. Waiting because you never know what you're walking into.
Yes, you always have to be ready.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way I carry a firearm now, as a, you know, and I'm actively thinking about what's going on around me versus just having the firearm and feeling safe just because I have it.
Yeah.
You know?
So that leads me to another question that I wanted to ask you. How do you feel about the whole gun control?
Oh, God, don't get me started on that. I'm a pretty pro-gun person. You know, I've owned firearms for my entire adult life, and I'm really into shooting. And I believe that every individual needs to take safety into their own hands. I'm a police officer, and I'm telling you, we can only get there so fast. And not to mention, there's always a time delay in between when you call 911 and when we're actually dispatched.
Yeah.
And if something bad is happening to you, or there's somebody there who wants to do harm to you and has the means to do harm to you, you, at a certain point, have to take that into your own hands and be able to defend yourself, because, unfortunately, we're more of a cleanup crew.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm very pro firearm. I think that your regular person should own a firearm. I think that your regular person should be trained in the usage of firearms and understand how a firearm works and the application of a firearm. Unfortunately, that's not how people treat firearms. So people buy them because they think they're cool, or they hate them because they think they're terrible. When the reality is that it's a tool, and you need to know how to use the tool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that a firearm is any more dangerous than a knife is. It's the person who has it in their hands that changes things. I think we have a mental health issue, not just here in the States, but I think that's the world is a violent place, and I don't think there's any amount of policy or law that's going to change the not violent nature of people. You know, so I'm not really into gun control.
Right.
So.
Hmm.
And I'm not saying that. You know, I will gladly hear other people's opinions about it. I like to have conversations, and I try to just see things from both ways in a rational frame of mind. But I just can't understand why people would want to limit themselves in their ability to protect themselves. Because there's always bad people, whether it's a gun or a knife or a rock.
I think a lot of people see that as a tool to harm others, so
sure.
They don't see, especially Japanese people, like from where I'm from, we don't see guns as a means of protection. We see it as a weapon.
Sure.
So, instantly, when we hear or see guns, it's just that they are pointed at us, and we are always the victims.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've never been in a situation where we are the ones that are holding the weapon to protect ourselves.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. And also, I think I was that way. So I'm not saying that this applies to every single Japanese person,
mm-hmm.
but I, as a Japanese person who was born and raised in Japan, was thinking like they should just eliminate guns altogether. Everybody lives happy. Nobody has a gun,
yeah.
So we won't fight.
Right.
But gun control, like limiting the amount of guns coming into your country, it's probably easier when you live on an island,
yeah,
like Japan.
No, exactly. Yeah.
But in the States, for one, guns has been being ingrained in the culture for so long, you know, and it's kind of difficult to remove it now. And also, the geographical location of the America makes it really difficult to limit or like eliminate completely the flow of, you know, firearms, drugs, human trafficking, all that stuff coming and going from and in to the States. So,
well, I don't know what that was.
That was my Skype. So I think a lot of people, especially from Japan, have a really hard time thinking about that aspect, you know. Like I was thinking, why don't they just get rid of all the, you know, guns altogether? But it's not as easy, you know.
Right.
It would work in a perfect world.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, it would be extremely challenging to just get rid of all guns, you know.
Yeah, and I mean,
and I know that, you know, gun control is not trying to get rid of all guns.
No,
it's just trying to limit the type of people that have access to guns. And that I understand, and I'm all for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't disagree with any of that you said. But I think it's important to realize, too, that, I mean, we're talking about laws. You know, we're talking about policies and laws, which, like, who follows policies and laws? People who are already going to abide by the law and the policy. You can't make a law that's going to stop a criminal from being a criminal. If that was the case, they wouldn't be a criminal. I mean, it's impossible to control. I mean, just yesterday we pulled 2 stolen pistols off a guy. And I mean, you know, the one pistol had been stolen 2 years ago, and not even by him. It was out of like 3 counties away from where we were. And I mean, there's just no way to control that type of thing. I think the law is only there to keep the honest man honest, and obviously anybody who's operating outside of that is already doing something wrong, right? So
yeah,
you know, if I could stop violence, if I could just push a button and eliminate all violence from the world, I would jump all over that, and I'd do it with a giant smile on my face. That's just not how it works, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that in that current environment, I think you just gotta take your protection into your own hands. And again, I mean, the firearm is there as a tool. I believe it should be treated as such, and I don't think it should be seen as anything more than that. It's obviously a people problem. There's plenty of crimes that occur every day that people don't use guns and somebody still dies. In fact, there's probably more crimes that are committed without a firearm that results in somebody's death than there are crimes committed with a firearm that results in somebody's death, because firearms are harder to access. And again, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I go to purchase a firearm from a retailer or a regular place that requires me to go through a background check, which I'll pass every single time. A criminal does not do that, obviously. They're going to get their firearm from some dude who lives down the street, and they're going to purchase a stolen firearm, you know, so. Yeah. I think the gun control, quote-unquote, thing is just an impossible debate, and yeah, that's how I feel about that. I mean, it's terrible things that happen, obviously, if you turn on the news right now. Some of the things that happened in the recent week, it's obviously terrible, and there's no doubt about that, but, I don't really see that as a gun problem. I really see that as a people problem.
Mm.
I mean,
yeah, I'm sure the instantaneous aspect of firearms have a lot to do with the like violence of the crimes. You know,
yeah.
It's like if you were to like hurt someone with a knife, it requires like a lot more effort and like mental readiness to use the weapon, because you had to first get that much closer to that person to actually stab and harm that person. And, you know, it's like you probably feel the stabbing sensation, you know, as the blade enters the body and all that. But it's like gun, like hurting something, I feel like I've never obviously shot a person, but I could imagine that it might feel less personal. Because you're only pulling the trigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't know that there is a significant difference in like the mental state between which tool you use. But kind of going off that a little bit, I think it's interesting that just the thought that whenever there's one of those incidents that goes on, I mean, all it takes is one person with a firearm who has good intentions instead to stop that situation. You know, whether it's the police or a regular person with a gun, it's like that's obviously what it takes to stop that sort of situation.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think that that's an exhausting conversation, just the gun debate, you know.
We obviously, you know, wish that there was zero gun violence.
Yeah, of course.
Or,
but, you know, it's the world we live in, man.
Yeah, true. So, let's see. I have another question to you. What kind of change do you wish to see in the law enforcement world?
What kind of change do I wish to see in the law enforcement world? That's really interesting. You know, honestly, I wouldn't change very much about the job that I'm currently working. I wish it was a little less paperwork. I wish the city that I worked for and the state in general would be a little more hardline on actually prosecuting people. I mean, I understand that there's a lot of people in jail, and you may or may not actually agree with people going to jail, but the reality is that there are plenty of people out there walking around in your hometown or in the city you live in, or maybe they're your neighbor, who just simply should not be free to walk around. And I'm not saying everybody's a criminal. I'm not saying every crime constitutes that type of mindset. There are plenty of crimes that you can commit that I think it's stupid that you would get arrested for. But there is a portion of our society who just shouldn't be out walking around. They're just violent. Maybe they have mental issues that cause them to be violent, and they have the means and the connections to be able to obtain tools to allow them to hurt other people. I wish that when we arrested somebody for a violent crime, the reality is that they're probably going to be out in 2 or 3 days, unless this is like the 30th time they've done a violent crime. Because the Seattle area where I work, they're not very hardline in prosecuting people. So I think that I wish we would invest less of our time in people that haven't committed violent crimes and invest more of our time in prosecuting the people who have committed violent crimes, because those people should be in a cage. So, just a couple weeks ago, I told you I had contacted this dude who just got done smoking meth. He ended up having a felony warrant for some really terrible shit, and he had just gotten out of jail. He was in jail for 14 years for murdering someone. You know, and he's back out, already doing more violent things. He's been arrested 10 times since he's been out of jail, and I guarantee you he's walking around there right now. Mm-hmm. He's free, out walking around us. And it's just a time bomb. That's a matter of time before you kill somebody again or does something terrible, and it's not because we didn't do our job. You know, he's been arrested 10 times by us, so I don't know.
It's just a judicial...
Yeah, which I do believe the judicial system is flawed, for sure. I don't have the answers. I don't know what the correct thing is to fix it, but I do believe that violent people belong in a fucking cage, and I try to do everything I can in a day to make sure that happens. So,
well, thank you for your service.
Yeah, maybe that was pretty dramatic.
No, but I mean, that shows how much committed you are to the job. So I mean, that if anything assures citizens like me, you know, that you're doing, you're on the front line, doing your job every single day, so.
I try to not rant instead and just answer in a simple fashion.
No, I like it. I like your rant. Alright, so my next question is, what are the most challenging aspects of being a police officer?
I mean, I can only obviously answer this for myself, but sometimes I get this feeling when I'm driving to work every day, and obviously I'm kind of driving into the unknown, and I just have no idea what it'd be like. So I think I have like a little bit of anxiety usually going into work, and I think that's, I don't know, can be kind of difficult to deal with. Just because, again, you know, you don't know what you're going to get into for the day. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going on while you're on your way to work, that you might be, some days I go into work and we have briefing and we don't do anything for a half hour before we go out and we eat donuts and have a good time. And other days, like yesterday, I didn't even get to go to briefing because we had a tone out, which is for a violent crime. They play tones over our loudspeaker system, which is like a call for immediate service. And it's like, well, shit, I didn't even have my vest zipped up all the way, and now I'm running to go confront people with guns and stuff, you know. So, yeah, that can be a little difficult to deal with. It can be daunting.
That's a very foreign idea to me. My days are usually very predictable.
And you know, that's good for a lot of people. I don't think that I don't like doing the same thing every single day, and that's another reason why I really enjoy the job. Every day is definitely different. So
I see. So it's good and bad. That's very like anxiety triggering. But also, I don't know, like sparks up your adrenaline level.
It does.
Through the roof.
It kind of throws a switch and makes me a little bit more aware in like different ways that I would never really maybe aware in the past of just things that are going on around me again. And also, it definitely makes me feel alive. that's for sure.
So you like that?
I do like that. Yeah, I like it. But sometimes driving to work, I'm like, like as I'm pulling into the parking lot, like, oh shit, oh shit. That's how my body feels.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you just kind of have to fucking do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In the beginning of this podcast, we talked about now the police and the law enforcement officers are being kind of on display.
Yeah.
You know, because there have been a lot of incidents that were like broadcasted on media, where police officers were bringing injustice to society. I don't know
how sure,
to
yeah.
put that in like a mild term. But do you personally do anything that like prevent that from happening on like your watch? Is there any particular things that you pay greater attention to or try not to do?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that you know, my go-to tool, and I think that a lot of people's go-to tool, is to like always try to de-escalate everything. I think that there's a lot to be said about starting off on the right path to ensure things stay on the right path, you know. I don't go out and try to argue with people and get them heated up so that we can fight or anything, you know. I think it's really important to always try to de-escalate everything, and if need be, maybe to put people in handcuffs early instead of sitting there arguing with them when you know they're going to be arrested or whatever. Yeah, I try to always make sure that I'm a couple steps ahead of where I'm going so that I have the upper hand. And so to try to de-escalate things or keep things de-escalated.
So how do you do that? How do you anticipate the situation or like how to de-escalate?
Well, you have to have a good understanding of how the law works, you know, when you're allowed to put somebody in handcuffs and when you're not, you know. For me, and for most of the officers I work with, I will do so at the very earliest opportunity to ensure that there's not a struggle or a fight, or maybe even before the person realizes that that's what we're there for.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so. I feel like from a person who's never been in handcuffs rather than, like, other than you practicing, like, putting handcuffs on me.
Yeah, when I was in the academy.
I know it feel like it sounds and seems very dramatic to be in handcuffs, right?
Yeah.
But now I realize, like from what you've told me, handcuffs are not just for police officers to like arrest people. It's actually for their own safeties as well, like so that you know they won't. Seem like they were about to attack other people, that would lead the police officers to respond to that reaction, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That could be very dangerous, you know, physically. That could definitely end up in a physical altercation. So, if you're in a handcuffs and if you're just sitting on one spot, that kind of things can be prevented.
Yeah, and the thing that's important too that I don't think people know is that it's very easy to unarrest someone. You know, if we're there and I'm not saying that you shouldn't defend yourself if you're doing rightfully so, if you're, you know, but just because you're in handcuffs, it doesn't mean that you're going to jail for sure. There's a lot of different types of detainment.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a Terry stop, which if the correct threat indicators are there, the person is being detained. They can be placed in handcuffs even if they're not actually under arrest, and that's for officer safety and the safety of the person that they're speaking with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I know you, and I love you very much, and I know that I'm extremely biased because, you know, I'm your wife.
Right.
But I think that you make a really good police officer, even though that I don't know anything about laws and policies and law enforcement system,
mm-hmm.
I know that I would want a police officer like you to be the responder if I was calling 911.
Hmm. Well, thank you. That's very nice.
But what about you? What kind of police officer do you wish to become?
I just want to be able to be the go-to guy who can kind of deal with anything as it evolves. And I think it's important to understand that every situation that we go to is like, it's a very quickly evolving situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's always factors that you didn't know about, and there's always stuff that comes up that it's like, oh fuck, that changes everything, you know? And so I you know, hope to be the person who can always deal with that kind of thing and,
mm-hmm.
and act and make decisions accordingly. And I just want to be able to help people,
mm-hmm.
which is really a huge portion of why I got into this job. And I think that's why a lot of people are in this job, is to be able to help, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for answering my questions.
Oh, yeah.
And I have one last question for you.
All right, hit me with it.
What kind of quality do you think the policing requires the most as a person?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. You know, I think a huge one is probably honesty, the ability to tell the truth, even if it's uncomfortable. And I think that you just have to have that level of personal integrity to always want to do the right thing, even if it's uncomfortable or if you know it's going to be unpopular. I think it's really important to just be a good person and to get into the job for the right reasons. You know, you can't just say, hey, that looks cool and fun, and be a good police officer. Like, you have to actually put forth effort and to ensure that you're ready to make the hard decisions. I think those are probably the leading qualities of being, like, a good law enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somebody who just is very new, so maybe that will change over the years.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to be willing to confront really uncomfortable things. I mean, it's like very possible that I could go to work on Friday and get punched in the face or shot or stabbed, or maybe I'll see something that's terrible and I'll cry, or or maybe I'll see something that's incredibly happy and I'll, you know, or it could be all those things in one day. And
yeah.
I think that you just need to be able to be very flexible and to deal with those things and to be able to make decisions through those
mm-hmm.
things. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, I like that. I liked that, the personal integrity.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes a lot of personal integrity, I think.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for answering all the questions.
No, thanks,
I think my fulfilled.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody who asked the questions too. That's
so
really
much.
Cool. I'm really glad. And if you guys have any other questions, you know, feel free to ask
mm-hmm.
her, and I will do my best to answer you through her.
Yeah,
so
we are probably going to revisit these questions, maybe not all, in hopefully several months or maybe a year.
Yeah, this is actually something on my very first shift, the first sergeant that I worked for told me, you know, welcome to the craziness in the world of law enforcement, and you're a baby cop, congratulations, that's awesome. And he said that you should record an interview of yourself right now, or at the earliest time that you can, just talking about how you feel about your job and all those things, and try to revisit that in 5 years to see how it's changed, and to hopefully bring yourself back to be motivated about the job in five years. And this is something I really wanted to do, so it's actually really interesting that we're doing this.
So I don't think the questions that we went over today covered this, but how do you feel about the job?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. It's so much fun, and again, you know, I get to do really cool stuff and go help people, and, you know, I think I've probably said this 100 times already, this same answer, but yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's just crazy and gnarly and just like every adjective that I can even think of kind of fits it all at once, and it definitely is a unique career, and I think that I wish people would do a lot more research about it before they chose it as a job, maybe, because I see a lot of people who go forth and fail or they quit. I know a really close buddy of mine, he went through the whole academy with me. He did a very different job, a career, for the last 16 years of his life. Quit that because he wanted to be a police officer. And very recently, in the last couple weeks, decided that it's not for him anymore. So he made it to but like a month and a half, and then he decided that he was done with it. Mm-hmm. And now he's trying to get back into his previous career. And, you know, it sucks to see people struggle and to have a hard time. So if you're interested in this job, I think you should do a lot of research.
Yeah, but maybe it's one of those things that you're going to have to see for yourself.
You have to experience it. Yeah, and, you know, there's a way that you can do that. You can do ride-alongs with agencies, and it's possible. Like, as soon as I'm off probation for my career, which will be in, like, November, I'll be able to take friends and family out for a day on the job and stuff like that.
So they can see. Me?
Yeah, I could take you. Yeah.
Wow.
And a lot of agencies have a program similar to that. Just the other day, my buddy brought his mother-in-law to work, and she was...
My mom would love that.
Next time she visits, we could probably do that. But, I think it's just very unique, and I love it.
I'm glad you love it. It makes me extremely happy to see you enjoy your new career. So, congratulations.
Thank you very much. that don't get me wrong, I have been sitting in my car or at a call, and I'm just like, what the fuck did I get into? Because you're dealing with crazy stuff or whatever, but it's just at the end of the day, I'm very, very happy that I chose the job that I'm in. I've definitely never enjoyed work as much as I do now.
Great. I don't think not very many people can say that. Yeah, maybe not with this degree of passion.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
So, well, great. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this was a really exciting and fun episode to record. So, thank you all for listening.
Thanks.
Yeah. See ya.